So, good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Dave. How are you? Here we are after many, many years. How many years has it been, Dave, since we've seen each other?
Well, it's got to be at least, what, 20, possibly
it's got
30
be.
Years.
30 years time. We're both looking so good. It's great, isn't it?
I know what you're going to say. I haven't changed a bit.
You haven't changed a bit. Really, really good, Dave. Still got that suave vibe about you. Really,
excellent.
Really good.
Yeah, I was just going to say, years and years ago, I used to purchase quite a lot of my tunes from a certain record store in London, Holborn, called City Sounds.
Yeah, City Sounds in London.
Proctor Street, yeah.
That's the one, Proctor Street, just in Holborn. And, you know, we were predominantly like an imported record store, getting, you know, lots of hot new records in from America, Japan, Europe, and supplying to local DJs, well, all around the world, really, not just local DJs. And you were one of our fine customers, young David. He used to come up and frequent City Sounds and spend copious amounts of money with us.
I was going to say, I thought I should have had shares, really.
That's right, I think you've got shares in there.
Because I was going to say, I think I was spending probably more than my mortgage at the time.
That's it.
And I had to hide those bills from my wife.
Yeah,
my future wife.
Yeah, that's the one. And, you know, kind of. That's normally what happens to a lot of people. Otherwise, you don't even get married. That's it.
Bit of an addiction, actually.
Oh, it is. Yeah, yeah. But it's like anything. You know, when you've got music in your blood, you know.
So yeah, brilliant. Dave was kindly put together as usual with all the guests that have been on. I asked him to think a little bit deeper than normal, just to see if we could pull out a selection of the important tracks to you over the years.
Yeah, I think the key thing is the important tracks to me.
Yes.
And probably to you as well, Dave, I would imagine.
Well, I was going to say.
Might have a few of those.
Oh, I hope so, yeah.
You know, as much as, you know, some of these records were, you know, I weren't necessarily selling them as new records, because some of them are going back quite a few years before I was actually in town doing the stuff. But, you know, I'll kick off with a few things for you, Dave. And I'm sure you've bought the majority of these off me, you know, in one way or another. A jazz artist called Judy Roberts.
Yeah.
Yeah, you remember Judy Roberts, don't you? And a track called Never Was Love.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Huge Dingwalls.
Oh, absolutely love it. You know what I mean? Just such a good record. Lots of good feel-good factor for me. And, you know, really love that record. The album was good. And, you know, she's had plenty of other stuff. Her version of Dindy was very, very good. And, you know, that whole era when, you know, Giles Peterson was on Radio London, then you had the scene in London, the jazz scene in London was huge. And this was, it's very much a City Sounds record, because I do believe my partner Johnny Wright, we kind of distributed this record in the store. So, in other words, what we'd effectively done is we brought over loads of copies from America, and we supplied other record stores within the UK with this record. But personally for me, this was a lovely record.
Back to the start, actually, just give us a bit of background on yourself, actually. I mean, because there was a couple of bits there that I wasn't aware of. So you started as potentially a professional golfer
or something. This is the plan. Okay, right. So I left school kind of about 16, 17 years old, around about 81, ish, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be a professional golfer, so I played a lot of golf over the years, and cut a long story short, I really gave it a good crack, but didn't quite make the grade. So, you know, I wanted to follow my heart and love, which was music,
right,
which had obviously been bubbling for a good few years prior to that.
And you were into the soul sounds at that point,
yeah, definitely. You know, that whole soul sound is very much where I was at.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I got into the music business via... Really, I don't know what you would call it now. I suppose most modern people call it an apprenticeship. Back in the day, it used to be called a youth opportunity scheme.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I was working in a record store in West Wickham.
Right.
And, you know, I was working there 5 days a week, not really getting any money for it, but I just loved it. It was a record store that just sold commercial top 75 or top 20 records and, you know, stuff. It was lovely, but it was what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I then moved on about a year later to another record store in Alpington called LP's, which in many ways was pretty famous for other reasons. They had a massive 7-inch selection of deleted records and just loads of stuff. Again, it was a lot of it was rock and pop, but there was a lot of soul in there as well.
Yeah.
And I got introduced to a good friend of mine. I met a lot of very good people. This was kind of the first chance I had to kind of really put into practice what I loved, which was promoting and selling kind of good quality soul and dance record.
Yeah.
I met a guy called Tony Monson, who's a very good friend of mine, and he was bringing records in. I was starting the scene in Alpington, so I was selling imports. Bear in mind, the marketplace in Alpington is not particularly big for that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I had a little bit of a following of local DJs that were buying records in the early 80s.
Yeah.
81, 82.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really pumping the stuff, really pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I was in my element. I stayed there for a few years. Then I got introduced to my partner at City Sounds Records called Johnny Wright. And, you know, City Sounds was a successful jazz funk empire in the 70s. And, you know, I jumped in around about 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of done my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of, yeah, I just, suddenly you've got this person who's coming from in the sticks. I don't know, the best way I can explain it is, it's kind of like you're a second division team.
Yeah.
And suddenly you've just got promoted to the Premiership. It's that whoosh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's great. It's lovely. Yeah. So,
but it was faltering a bit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There was an opportunity to kind of make your mark a little bit. Yeah.
The thing is, my partner Johnny, before me, we used to distribute a lot of records. We had an import. We used to import records from America and Japan to City Sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And City Sounds would then distribute the records to other record stores up and down the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we done that. We had the CTI jazz label we used to distribute. And we would just be distributing all these amazingly big records.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz records.
Yeah.
Eddie Russ. I remember Johnny telling me he had 5,000 copies of the Eddie Russ album, See the Light, and it was just a dog. It just wasn't selling. Just wasn't selling. Then Robbie started playing it, and it really started picking up. And,
yeah,
you know, we used to bring in quite a few Japanese records, and a lot of our tool for these records on a sales point of view was the likes of Robbie Vincent, Jeff Young. People like that would play these records on the radio and everyone would just go mad and want to buy them.
Yeah.
And, you know, we would sell them and stuff. And there was a record by a Japanese artist called Kazu Matsui Project.
Right.
And a track called Time Flies, which is just absolutely awesome. Awesome.
Excellent.
So good, Dave.
Win or lose, you must choose. Your time is running.
That may not be familiar with, you know, you in the shop, perhaps. But could you list just a few of the early DJs that were using the store?
Oh, yeah. You know, we were.
I mean, you mentioned Robbie Vincent, didn't you? And
Robbie Vincent, Pete Jeff Tong. Young, Pete Tong, Colin Hard. Greg used to come in now and again. Greg Edwards. Oh, God, Giles Peterson, Paul Clark. I mean, Paul Oakenfold.
It is essentially virtually everyone, basically.
Yeah, everyone just.
I mean, even when you sort of start leading up to the sort of house years and stuff.
But yeah.
I mean, but
yeah.
We'll come back to that. But I was going to say, I mean, it was a main source really of black dance music.
Yeah, it was great. Star. It was really good. And, you know, going back to the point where pre me, you know. The importing of the records got so big that my partner John had to open his own distribution company somewhere separately, and it was called Greyhound Records. So he located over to Battersea, and they were bringing in a lot of records, and it was kind of the hip hop thing was taking off, and it was just they were selling a lot of records, and the record store City Sounds got kind of left behind a bit, so it started faltering. And this was just before I took over. So I was effectively, you know, I went for the job interview and kind of I had to twist John's arm because John was thinking of closing the store down.
Really?
But I said to him, look, I can turn this around.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with my persistency and my dream of wanting to work there as well, I jumped in there, I took over the store, and we turned it around pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And before we know where we were really firing again. And it was great. You know, then I worked my way through, I become, you know, partner, co-owner, and so on and so on.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much where it was. And it was a lot of hard work and a lot of tears and sweat, but we got there in the end.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah, brilliant.
Very good.
Sometimes I feel like there's no use in trying. Why can't I face the fact we've lost what we'll never get back? I don't know where did we go wrong? I say I'm leaving, but my feelings are too strong. And baby, you know I'm in love, baby. So in love with you, darling. Just make believe in I'm in love, darling. So in love with you, baby. When I say I'm leaving, girl, I'm just make believe in I ain't going nowhere. No, baby, I ain't going nowhere. Oh, darling, talk to your mama. Yeah.
Is my all-time number one favourite soul record. Every time I hear this record, I get goosebumps. And a little tear to my eye as well. It is such a good record.
It is for me as well, actually, if I'll be honest. I'll admit now.
Dave has not seen this list. This is the first time Dave is seeing this list.
But for myself, actually, I remember playing out with that one night. I did a charity gig for Junior Googum in Colchester, a guy, and I remember playing out with that track one night. Yeah. All the lights had come on at the end of the evening, and everyone was still.
It's that intro, It's just, well, spine tingling.
Can I also mention, while I run through all these sort of.
Yeah, sure.
These memories or familiar bits and reminiscing a bit on bits and pieces. You had some, I mean, can you list a few of the guys that used to work in there, in the early days?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a couple that I'm aware of.
Well, we used to have, you know, we had a lot of influential people that used to work at City Sounds as well. Mike Sefton. Mike Sefton's a lovely guy. He used to work on the Vans. He went on to be A&R at A&M Records.
Nigel
Wilton, my very good friend Nigel. Pete Tong used to be a Saturday boy at City Sounds. And Pete Tong was a little bit of a runaround for us. He slightly before my time working in the store, Pete was. But Pete, I know Pete was the one who discovered Laurel, Mellow Mellow. Mm-hmm. Johnny, you know, when the records used to come in from the States, you know, Johnny used to give Pete one of each and just say, look, just go away and listen to the tracks. Because obviously we just had a plethora of DJs coming in from all over the country. Some really, really big DJs, and, you know, Colin Curtis, I think Richard used to come down, Richard Serling. You know, he used to have some really big DJs, and, you know, they needed to know what tracks. And Pete's ears are very, very good. So, you know, he used to kind of, as well as kind of sweep the shop floor and stuff like that. He used to work in the store on Saturdays, and, you know, Pete was great, really, really good. So we'd have Pete, Mike, we've had so many people, you know, Richard Kay, a really good friend of mine, Richard, he's lovely.
Yeah.
He's living in Florida now, but I took over from. Richard had the store really running well. Then there was a period of about a year and a half when it was a no man's land.
Yeah,
that's why it went down a little bit. Paul Redman used to work there, and, you know, it just goes on. Nigel, Paul Woods, Ray Keith, my good friend Ray.
Right. A few of the regular listeners in Colchester, we all remember Ray.
Ray's lovely. He's great. Darren Stokes, Andy Thompson, my good friend. Thompson.
Quite a lot of different
guy
people,
called Tom Henenbury, and his brother Robin Henenbury.
There was a guy I mentioned to you earlier. Robert this Blenheim. Chap called Steve Smith. Well, you'd be thinking maybe someone else, but a guy I met in Cambridge who said he worked at Six.
We did have a little rota of part-time guys who we used to come in, and, you know, they were obviously, you know, we were just so busy with certain things.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, yeah, we'd have like a rota of people that we would just give part-time work to.
Yeah.
And, you know, that worked well for us as well.
Informed by Dave, actually, that he was a regular visitor of the shop. This is Dave Lee.
Oh, well, Dave Lee used to come in
when
the store.
He was working for Rough Trade Distribution.
Yeah, Dave and Rough Trade. Dave really, you know, I like Dave. You know, Dave, amazing set of ears. Really good. Phase two reaching, you know, that kind of early era.
Yeah, yeah.
And Dave had some great stuff. Yeah, he was always very, very good set of ears, Dave. Uh-huh. Really knew his music and, you know, good DJ as well.
Yeah. And Chris Checkley as well.
Oh, Chris, yeah, good Chris. Chris used to come in. See, a lot of these people come out of the boogie era.
Yeah.
So that whole Lyceum, you know, the Electric Ballroom, you know, the Paul Trouble Anderson, the Jay Strongman, Dave Durrell, CJ McIntosh, you know, that whole, that boogie thing. Yeah. You know, I mean, they all come from there.
Yeah.
And Chris come out of that whole boogie era as well.
Yeah.
And he went on to have a distribution company. He had CT Records. And,
yes, yeah.
And he become a really big distribution company called CT Distribution.
Yeah.
And Chris is a lovely guy.
Yeah.
Really nice bloke.
Yeah. No,
really good company as well.
Yeah, he's an old friend.
Yeah.
And, well, I didn't fully appreciate myself how big he'd got actually.
You know, Chris really, really, he worked really hard, Chris.
Yeah.
And he had his fingers in a lot of pies.
Yeah.
And because he's a genuine guy, he'd done so well.
Yeah, yeah.
Really good guy.
Brilliant.
I was really thinking about, you know, what diva type of female vocalist dance record really hits me. And, you know, this record springs to mind, Denise LaSalle and a track called I'm So Hot off of the album. It's just, oh, such a good record.
Yeah.
You know, I know certain DJs really just respond to that big time.
brilliant, brilliant. And you also mentioned earlier, which I wasn't aware of, but you said there was a few famous DJs that visited the store.
Yeah.
One in particular that you mentioned who ended up surfing. You said.
Oh, God, yeah. We had... Todd Terry was in town.
Yeah.
And Todd, you know, I used to chat with Todd all the time, and he used to buy imports off. As well as buying kind of the latest British promos, because obviously everybody wants the British promo thing. They want the hot new UK, which are their imports. But he used to buy American records off me as well. Because we used to get American records before the Americans got them.
Wow.
Which, no, it was a bit weird, because what happens is they export them kind of like a week before they release them in the States. So we would necessarily... So it would be constantly like DHLing something over to Todd.
Wow.
But anyway, we got Todd... One day come in the store, and I don't know, he was DJing at maybe someone like the Ministry or somewhere like that. And it was a Friday afternoon, and we're just standing behind the decks just jockeying some records for people. Just running the mill, because where we were based was in the was pretty much prime city kind of territory. And you'd have a lot of just normal guys in suits that wanted to buy their records. Yeah. And Todd would be standing behind the counter selling them records. It's great. You know what I mean? It's just so good.
That was
funny. We also had Robbie behind the decks a few times, Robbie Vincent.
He's
the kind of Robbie, can you just serve that guy? I've got an overseas call I've got to take here. Can you just serve that person for me? And he would, he was game. He was game, Robbie.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Another one for me as well, again, not going to get too soppy, but kind of when I got married to my lovely wife, we used this as our record, our first dance. Dexter Wansell, The Sweetest Pain. Another classic.
Excellent, yeah.
Good record, really good record. The whole, you know, kind of Philly vibe.
Again, another Dingles classic, mid-afternoon classic.
The one, you got it.
Again, I was very surprised to hear you. There was a few artists actually appeared in the shop, yeah?
Yeah, we had some... You know, I've got a story to tell you. This is quite a famous one. One Monday morning, a lady came in the store and she wanted to listen to an album by Miles Davis.
Right, yeah.
And the album was the Girls Just Want to Have Fun album, which he'd done a cover version of that anyway. So I'm tracking through the album and, you know, she's nodding her head really appreciatively and... bear in mind, this is about like 9:30, 10:00 on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
The coffee's going and everything, and you know, she's really grooving to this record. And Anyway, so it comes to the end and she says, yeah, I'd like to buy that, please. I went, great, no problem. So I got a sealed copy because it was on American import. And she's gone to pay for it with her cheque and her second name is Davis. Right. And it turns out to be Miles Davis's wife.
Whoa.
Was buying his album. Wow. How weird's that?
Wow.
Miles Davis's wife. I think he was in town at Ronnie's or somewhere like that.
Right,
the,
yeah.
Playing. Wow. So, that weird. That's very strange.
Incredible.
And we had a jazz artist, jazz vocalist called Mark Murphy.
Mark Murphy, yeah.
And he came in the store one day and, you know, we were just chatting with him and we were just appreciative of his music. Roy Ayres has been in the store a couple of times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we've had PAs in the store from Patrice Rushen, Larry Graham,
it wasn't
Randy
particularly
Crawford.
Big, was it? I mean,
no, we were a tiny little store, but the thing was, it was, the thing is, people were coming into town and because they maybe were going on Radio 1, Robbie's show, or Radio London.
Yes, yeah.
You know, when he was on Radio London, Robbie, they would come in the store because, you know...
Yeah.
They'd be on his radio store or maybe they would be... they'd be performing somewhere and, you know, Steve Arrington, Gene Kahn...
Steve Arrington.
Mark Murphy, you know what I mean? It's just... It was great, you know, and you come in and just hang out with these people and just chat with them. Even Bill Oddie. Used to come in. Bill Oddie. Bill Oddie from the Goodies, Ecky Thump fame. He used to buy Jap Jazz albums off me.
Yeah?
Yeah, Bill was really into his Jap Jazz. Yeah. Also, Steve Davis used to buy quite a bit off me.
Did he?
You know, the snooker player?
Yeah, but
he was into his soul stuff, yeah.
He went to GIFs quite a lot, but he
GIFs,
did pop in there as well.
He used to, I know he went to see George and Lynn at GIFs, quite a lot. But he used to come in, I think when he used to do quite a bit of stuff on Radio London, I think.
Right.
Yeah, he used to come in. Well, Robbie, actually. Robbie used to bring him in.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, some good stuff. Good times.
Yeah, brilliant.
Lots of good times, yeah. Got to say as well, love this guy, love his work. Randy Brown.
Yeah.
And a track called Always In The Mood. Really like that. You know, I could reel off just Randy Brown records, but Always In The Mood is just such a good record.
Yeah, lovely.
Again,
yeah.
It's got that kind of little bouncy flow that... could almost drop into, I suppose you'd call it now, a house set in a funny sort of way.
Really?
A soulful house set would work.
Really
good.
Nice.
Really good.
Every morning I wake, even doing coffee break, the only thing on my mind is loving you, girl, all the time. Can't get enough of the sexy things you do. That's why when it comes to making love to you, that you wanna do, you are without a doubt a part of me. I can't do without. Hey lady, just call my name. Now come that shower and rain. Can't get enough of the sexy things you do. That's why when it comes to making love to you, sexy things you do. That's why when it comes to making love to you, I like the things you do. Well, don't keep me satisfied.
What were the I was going to say, just talk a little bit about the sort of DJs that you, the punters, you know, was there particular times of the week that, you know, your technique are selling records, like the prime A-lister DJs? Did they have a private
you know what I mean? It was a little bit of a...
Did the imports arrive, like midweek
we'd get them in every single day. We'd get a shipment from the States. You would normally find Monday was a bit of a donut day because, you know, America, obviously, they weren't shipping anything out on Sunday because it was, you know, obviously it wasn't happening. Nobody was open. You know, what you would normally find is you'd most of the labels would normally release either on a Monday for Tuesday, and a lot of the Americans would release Thursday night for Friday morning. There'd be an album, let's just say for argument's sake, a Brass Construction album, and the UK release date would be on the Monday. So the Americans would release it on a Thursday for the Friday. You know, there used to be the time when Robbie used to get like a promo of it, or Jeff, and they would play it in advance. So everyone would be, you know, their tongues would be hanging out, they'd be gagging for this record. And I know I speak probably for you as well, Dave. You know, you used to kind of queue up on a Saturday morning, and if you could get an import copy of that Brass Construction album with that killer track on it, and you'd be playing it on Saturday, you'd pay the extra £3 or £4 and get that imported copy, rather than get the UK copy on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or whatever. So you would just get, do you know what I'm saying? So there was a lot of that.
Again, for the younger listeners, so I might mention, actually, though, obviously downloads didn't exist at this point, and to be ahead of the game, you had to, you know, to get those imports for, you know, you were primed once you learned the technique of trying to get these DJ promo, the white label promos, but obviously chasing up the imports mainly from the store. You had to really make a concerted effort to
because
you were mentioning earlier on about times when you were slightly compromised as to X amount of copies to X amount of DJs.
There is nothing worse, Dave, than when you've got on a Friday afternoon at 1:30 or 1 o'clock,
play a certain track,
and you play, let's just say, you've just had an import 12 land or an import album or a 7 inch of, I don't know, let's just say, could you imagine something like Brass Construction Moving, and you've got 6 copies, and, you know,
that's 12,
no one's ever heard this track, and you play this track, and the shop just erupts, and you've got a lot of unhappy people. So straight away,
ever get any fights break out?
Well, almost like it,
really,
you know what I mean?
Really?
Yeah. But the thing was, you had to service. So when a record, when you got the shipment in, first of all, Robbie, Pete, Jeff, Clarkie, Giles,
Colin
Hudd, definitely Colin. You know, all these people had to have their records put away. So if you've got 10 copies and you've got to put them away in their pigeonholes, and then suddenly you've got the likes of other DJs that come in the store, they're not going to get it. And it's like, but
there was a bit of spinning plates going on occasionally, I mean, without actually admitting it, but
we did have to rob Peter to pay Paul. Definitely, and it was a bit like that, but the thing was, a lot of people didn't know what these records were, because as we started getting towards like 84, 85, 86, you know, Robbie would get, for instance, a Roy Ayres album. So you'd pretty much hear, you know, 5-6 weeks prior to the release date, everybody would be gagging for this. And you could say, well, I'll order 150 copies. So when it lands, you know, everyone's hands up, like, I want one, 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 one. It was no problem. But when you've got things that nobody really knew, and this was a bit more in the 12-inch era,
right? Yeah.
When, you know, for instance, you would get, I remember him saying, Ronnie Harris, 6 Million Steps was one.
Yeah.
It landed on Mercury, and we didn't have very many of them because there was no buzz. Now, how can there be a buzz when nobody's heard it? You've got to play it to get a buzz.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, you've got an album in, for instance, 1987, 88, and it's going to cost the punter £15.
Yeah.
We've just brought them in from Japan. You know, we don't want to get stuck with things we can't sell.
Yeah.
So you've got to be quite frugal. So it was one of them things, sometimes we would get something and we'd sell out in a matter of like a minute. And then you're like, oh God, you know, we're not.
Did you ever get stuck with any particular?
Oh, did God. You? I remember there was one record that Robbie turned us on to. Oh God. It was by an artist called Corgi Howe.
Oh, no.
Anyway, Robbie was really had a thing about this, and he used to play these tracks, and he was like really into it. And we decided to bring over, I think it was like 900 copies. God.
Yeah, you couldn't shift them.
I sold a few. It did have a couple of good tracks on it, but you've been Corgi Howe'd.
Surprise, surprise, the change is life. Sometimes puts it through. But still I ask myself, why should I have to go out and find me someone new? When ooh-wee, thought you were loving me. Ooh-wee, thought you were loving me, baby. All the time, I thought you were mine. Somebody else will get my time. Here I go again, round that same old day. You think by now I know my way. But here we are at the end of our road, and I just don't know what to do with myself. Cause ooh-wee, sworn you were mine. I would have
thought you were loving me, baby.
Thought you were loving me,
thought
baby.
Thought you were loving me, baby.
Thought you were loving me,
thought you were loving me, baby.
What happened?
Thought you were loving me, baby.
What was she doing? Did too many things together. Shopping. I was mad, but I was trying to be a good man. What happened, baby? What did she do to you?
I thought you were loving me,
but I didn't do. Tell me,
I thought you were loving me.
What did she do?
There was a record that I love so much by Bobby Johns called Thought You Were Loving Me.
I love a lot of that modern soul stuff that,
so good.
That Bob used to play quite a lot. Yeah,
yeah, it's another good one. Really love that. Very special little record to me. As I say, I hasten to add to everybody, these records, they're not sell, you know, they're not necessarily big sellers or whatever. They're just special records to me.
And I appreciate that. You know, I mean, which is a lot of the guests that have come on and they've always sort of, you know, your list could change easily. But it's great that you've spent some time thinking these ones out.
Bit of a curveball now, Dave, for you. my list next. Talking Heads, Once in a Lifetime.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that the likes of, you know, Larry Levan and Ron Hardy and people like that were playing this record in the Paradise Garage and stuff like that. And, but personally, the record was just such a good record, Once in a Lifetime. Really, really good.
And you may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by, let the water hold same as it ever was, 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 same as it ever was. Water dissolving and water removing. There is water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water.
Famous DJ that came and had a situation with his
hair.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there any other ones like that or any funny incidents in the shop? You know, using incidents?
We've just had so many funny incidents.
And also certain type of shoppers that used to come in, didn't you? Did you say that you got caught once with a certain shopper who came in listening to quite a number of vinyl records?
Yeah. You know, I mean, because of, you know, we used to get a lot of overseas customers coming, and, you know, some people would buy a lot of records. You'd get a lot of the Italian guys coming in, and they spend some serious money. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Americans would come in, the Japs, you know, I mean, people like that. And they'd come over, and they're not coming over to just buy like half a dozen records. They're going to spend some serious money with us. Mm-hmm. One particular guy, he'd come from I think he was from Greece or somewhere like that. Anyway, I tracked through about 25 albums, and he was giving me all the signs that, yeah, he was up for it, you know, he wanted them. So I'm thinking, oh, that'll do, you know, Monday morning, that'll ka-ching, you know, Nigel Wilton's winking at me, and it's all looking pretty good, you know, and it's all good, so we're getting out.
An hour and a half, 2 hours.
Some of the dusty ones that have been hanging about a bit, you know, we're blowing them off and having a go. And about 2 hours I'm spending with a guy.
Yeah.
And so he said, look, I'm going to have to go in a minute. And I said, okay, right, so all good for you. He said, oh yeah, can I listen to that one again? Well, I played another record, and he walked away buying one record. So I'd spent like two and a half hours.
Yeah.
And Nigel was just rolling around on the floor.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't when I asked him to put them all away. He didn't like that. But yeah, especially when they had to master bag and put the covers back out again.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you know, we had fun. Lots of good times.
Yeah.
Another record, massive in the reggae clubs, in the rare groove clubs. A commercial record, but again, one of them records that you hear the start of it and it just demands an audience.
Yeah.
Starview, Body Fusion.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? It's them stabs.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So, you know, that's a special one for me.
Yeah, Big Boogie.
Yeah, Big Boogie record. You know, I mean, we like Boogie.
Yeah.
Boogie's good.
Until the hunger turns to greed, I satisfy your needs.
I like what you do and you do it to me. It's how she knows you do it to me.
It feels so good.
You give me energy. It's how she knows you do it to me.
Like I knew it would.
I said I like what you do and you do it to me. It's how she knows you do
it. Feels so good to me.
It's about your nose, your
good.
Like what you do to me.
Always.
It's about your energy. It's about your nose.